I got an April Fool's joke for you. We had a producer that was professional and competent and didn't give a shit every five fucking seconds. No.
We don't.
We have my wife. That's what we have. Which she's been pushing the buttons all fucking day. She's like, guess what? I know you got a busy week ahead of you. Let me drive you fucking nuts. So you want to leave the house and leave me the fuck alone. Let's start the show.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton. Punch you in the eye and drink your rye. Sam Houston? Arsenal fans have another Sam. Right, AA, the fucking Gooner Graham. Stump of a lord. Looks great in shorts. Sam Grammy.
Sam Graham.
Fucking United! Fucking United!
Hello and welcome to the DU Football Show, a completely biased recap of the English Premier League as told by two common American schmucks. I'm your host, Sam Houston. And across the way from me, making sure that they bought four tickets because three would look creepy, my co-host, Mr. Samuel Graham.
Damn straight. Fuck yeah. That wasn't even on soundcheck.
No, I just, but sometimes just got to,
off-mic conversation.
You give me good material and I know exactly what I'm going to come in on. How you doing, buddy?
Not bad. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I mean, you got pocket hot sauce. I mean, it can't be too bad, right?
Fuck yeah.
I mean, you
telling your pocket hot sauce is where it's at.
It is the cheat code of all cheat codes, huh?
Yes, sir.
I love it.
Hey, Graham.
Yeah.
Does your pocket hot sauce want to run off with my pocket slider?
Yeah, for that one meal. But if I got to kill a squirrel, I can make that squirrel taste better for a week.
Yeah.
That's why, Taylor, it's more important to have a pocket hot sauce.
And I tell you what, would have made that pocket slider taste even better. That's for damn sure.
What?
We're recording at the DU Public House just outside the nation's capital. You can check us out wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, streaming live every single Monday night. Should you want to chat with us, there is many ways that you can. Mr. Graham, tell the good people how they can get in touch.
Absolutely. It's at DU Football Show on all the social media and DUFootballShow@gmail.com to get in touch via email.
Real quick, to all you Android users, if your phones were so fucking great, why don't you have a podcast platform anymore? Just saying.
Oh, shit. What happened to Google Play?
Google Play is going bye-bye.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yep.
So what are they going to do?
Player FM is where all the action's at now.
Player FM? It sounds like a bad
Player
song.
FM, our top three download spots are Apple, Google, not there anymore, Spotify, Player FM, and Podbean.
Yeah. Yep.
Nice.
Oh. Pocket Cast is after that, but I'm not sure that's a platform or...
a porn site?
Stare myself both work in the wine and spirit industry and both have a deep passionate love for all things distilled spirits. So as the red-blooded Americans we are, we vow to have a drink in our hand throughout this show and every single show. Mr. Graham, we are on to number four, and this is a humdinger of a whiskey.
Yeah, so this is Little Book Chapter 7. There you go, see that? In retrospect, it's 59.05% by volume. That's 118.1. For those of you keeping track at home, should run you around $150 on the shelf. I think we got it about that, didn't we? Very close to it.
$65, $70, I think, is what I paid.
Not too terrible. Yeah. The panel rated it a 95, and it's a blended American whiskey. David Fleming of the Whiskey Advocate is the one that brings you your blurb. For the seventh chapter of the Little Book series, eighth generation Jim Beam master distiller Freddie Noe blended the liquids of the previous six chapters with a new one. It's quite a combination, a mix of straight bourbons aged 18, 17, 9, and 4 years, along with 10-year-old and 4-year-old rye, and then a 5-year-old straight malt that was finished in applewood smoked barrels.
That was from last year.
The result is a rich array of flavors, chocolate cake, baked apples, and cinnamon, with plenty of heat, spice, and a long finish. There's a great unity of flavor, and it carries its proof remarkably well. Our highest scoring Little Book to date. Said they rated it a 95, like I said.
Yeah, so Little Book is the Booker's release, annual release. I'm not terribly angry about this being on the list. It has been on the list before. This is a lot like the Wild Turkey Master's Keep. You can find this bottle. It would be harder to find now that the list has come out, but in January, I still saw this bottle, this chapter on the shelf. And when it gets released, there's enough of it to go around.
Right.
Stores will get like a 6-pack case of this. They'll actually have a decent amount.
I like the little necker it came with it too. It's hard. I don't know if you can hear that.
Yep.
But so you can keep them and know what was in each little book, basically. So it's got the full blend listed on the front here. Co-mingled by instead of blended by. Recipe number 10, the 750. But then it's got a sticker on the back with all its tasting notes that they say should be on there. Color deep russet with golden hues. They say the aroma subtle sweetness with notes of clove. Yeah, definitely. And their taste, what they said was slightly floral with light smoke and sweet vanilla followed by caramel. I do get a lot of that apple and baking spice, big time baking spice, like good cinnamon, but not like, I don't really like cinnamon. I like it as a whiskey flavor, but I don't care for powdered cinnamon, like regular cinnamon.
Right, right. I know you said but that
this
before.
This is delicious.
It's in for me.
And the proof hits you right up front. I mean, this is one. So
hot. You know, you're drinking high proof.
So
we've
always said, you know, and maybe a little refresher, real quick. When with spirits, like with wine, you want to bury your nose in a glass and you want to breathe in through your nose to get as much of those aromas as you can. Spirits are too high proof. That just kind of burns your nostrils, and all you smell is alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you put your nose in, you want to breathe through your mouth and just let those vapors kind of naturally go up your nose without any astringency, is how you would smell it. But also, when you're tasting a spirit, you want to let it rest on your tongue for a minute. Allow that alcohol, especially high proof stuff, to kind of burn off your tongue a little bit.
Right.
Give it a little swish and allow some of those flavors to actually stand through beyond the heat. So just to, in case anybody gets some high proof whiskey anytime soon, just as a little refresher, that's how you need to be drinking so you can pick stuff out.
The other thing to mention with this, you know, we've talked about price point of this list. For me, I feel like this list should max out at 150, right? Mm-hmm. And typically that 150 I kind of reserve for Scottish whiskeys because they tend to start at about 100 is normally where most of them get going. This is, like I said, this is one of those exceptions to the rule. Like, this is not the unicorn of all unicorns. It is an annual release, but it's not impossible to get. I've bought 4 different little books in the wild, and I did buy the last one to make the list, which was the number 2.
Right.
And that one, God, that had some 25-year-old Canadian rye in it.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really good. That was my 49th birthday. I think I killed off that bottle with a cigar.
Yeah.
Sat on the back porch and
this would definitely be a good cigar whiskey.
It's delightful. And I'm not, and all that being said, is I'm not typically a fan of Booker's. I find Booker's to be too hot and I find Booker's to be too astringent. And yet somehow with their little book, they nail it every time, man. They're
they
just
figure it
really
out. Well, I said that the ages of all those things, it run back through them real quick, was an 18-year-old Kentucky Straight Bourbon, 17-year-old bourbon, 10-year-old rye, 9-year-old bourbon, 5-year-old malt whiskey finished in Applewood, 4-year Kentucky Straight Bourbon, and 4-year-old Kentucky Straight Rye. So, I mean, the youngest stuff in here is a pretty decent age.
Right.
You know, it's good. It must have mellowed and rounded it out a bit.
What do you think, Mel?
It's very hot. took my breath away the first time. And then the second time...
That's what she said.
I do like the cinnamon and the warm spice that comes with it. I'm not sure how much of this I could drink. It is a big one.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's a very big one, but it's one that you definitely respect from the very first sip.
The cube helps. The cube helps. It opens it up a little bit. Yeah. It takes a little bit of that heat off of it.
I just got it on ice here, so I'm going to give it a second.
But it is quite fucking lovely. Yeah. What else should we always do, Mr. Graham?
Always remember to drink responsibly. Sad, that last one.
Two great ones, and then dunk.
We should make sure that we go first.
Yeah,
we should make our get better one. As we go along, not worse.
I don't disagree. Sure, Billy, get ready to start mule kicking and fist pumping.
He's already said, y'all better put on some respect.
Ropes everywhere. We're going to open with the action of two matches that had a total of 13 goals and 2 3-1 comebacks. And it wasn't from the clubs you would expect it to be from. Newcastle 4, West Ham 3, Fulham 3, Sheffield 3. What a fucking batshit crazy match that was to wake up to.
So Sure Billy DM'd me. And he was like, did you watch that game? I actually couldn't. I was listening to it, but I was driving to pick up Tegan from her mother. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't see it. I was like, I can't wait to get tucked into the highlights because this was crazy. He was like, the whole second half was a highlight.
Yes.
I was like, it seemed like it, man, from the radio. What a wild game. It had literally had everything, including a boneheaded red card.
Yeah, it just, the we had talked about it on Injury Time. We were like, hey, look, to the soccer nerd, this is going to be a fun game. It isn't going to be the most entertaining of watches, but it's going to be a really good game. Wrong?
Yeah.
Wrong.
Both of us, like, they came to agreement. Like, how can we make these two look like idiots?
We're just going to fucking go balls to the wall. Yeah. I mean, it was almost like he just had, like, up and down. It was just up and down the field. It was frantic the whole fucking time. Mm-hmm. Even when West Ham was sitting back and holding and trying to, you know, withstand pressure, Newcastle was still coming at him with a fucking fury. It starts off with a penalty for Newcastle. We'll talk about the second penalty in a moment, but even this one seemed a little off.
Well, both, they're very similar in the way that he won both penalties. I mean, Soufal, I think, had more of an idea that Gordon was there.
Right.
Calvin Phillips did.
Yeah.
But it's still, he was making a motion towards the ball, not Gordon.
Right.
And Gordon got, in both instances, Gordon got in the way of,
oh, hey, hold on, let me throw my ankle in here real quick.
In my opinion, as a defender, and I was a defender in college and all that, I understand the rules. They are penalties, yes. Don't start with that argument. That's not the argument.
Yeah, what I was going to say, the rules are, that is a fucking penalty.
Yeah.
100 out of 100 times.
But it shouldn't be.
It's a shit fucking rule.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's a very poorly written rule. We talked about this a few years ago when Cresswell saw a red for literally just going to cross a ball out. And I think it was Trent Alexander-Arnold jumped in front of him and got kicked in the back of the leg. And it was like, Cresswell had no idea he was there. Yeah. He was going to clear the ball. And the guy just went, oh, let me stick my leg out and see if I get fouled.
Well, and that's the thing. So I have possession of the ball, right? And I'm making a play on the ball or trying to make a play on the ball. And you impeded me. In my opinion, as a former defender, that should be a foul on Gordon.
Well,
and it should be going the other direction.
Yeah.
Because if he sticks out and clips his heel, it's a foul. What's the difference?
Right.
Calvin, you know, Newcastle are gaining an advantage from impeding a West Ham player from playing the ball.
Right.
I think it's bullshit.
Now, but that also being said, they're both penalties.
They're both penalties. Like, which,
the way the rule is written, just when we talk about handballs, where the way it hits a defender's arm versus the way it hits an attacker's arm is deemed completely different, even though it hits them on the same spot in the same way. It's one's considered a handball and one's not considered a handball. So it's tough, right? But after that goal, West Ham the fuck out of Newcastle.
Oh, yeah.
Sat back, waited. That pass from Paquetá to Antonio.
To Antonio. Whoa. What a ball.
Oh, my God.
And I love the Paquetá Guimarães beating the hell out of each other all game, too. That was fun.
Yeah, we just played together. Fuck you.
Yeah, that was great.
The music, just that little bit of English he put on the ball when it just bounced and kind of rolled right back onto stride of it. I mean, it was
nice.
Gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. Now, here's the one that's kind of questionable is the goal right at the end of the half with the
quick free kick where Fabian Schär was holding his face.
Right. So if we set the standard that a head injury needs an automatic stop. Why isn't that stopped?
Right.
Why isn't that stopped?
I mean, he did get hit in the face. Do I think he needed to do all that? Absolutely not. But Kudus, his hand did hit him and strike his face. Right. I mean, that happened. And the game should have been stopped for you know, he stayed down and he's holding his head and there was contact. So the game should have been stopped and that free kick should not have been allowed to have been taken.
At least stop it to the point where the ref looks down at him and goes, get up or I'm calling out the medics.
Right. Right?
And then the guy would get up and then you go, but there wasn't even time to do that. He just, yeah, go ahead, play it.
But at the same token also, nobody on the field ever really tends to, unless it's cramp, tends to their teammate when they're down.
Right.
Why aren't you already starting to organize? Why aren't you already starting to call out assignments?
Right, especially considering a center back is out of the play.
Exactly. You need to be covering yourself just in case. That's, you know, and so that for me, Newcastle took their foot off the gas there. They let that slip.
Disagree.
That being said, Kudus and Bowen were fantastic as well in this instance.
Yep.
I mean, you know, a ball, what a great ball to Bowen. And then the little layoff for Kudus was excellent.
Yeah. And then.
And completely caught Newcastle napping.
Newcastle's down 3-1 and West Ham's doing what West Ham does.
David Moyes cracked a smile, which is, you know, one of the three horsemen of the apocalypse.
Yeah. There's no longer four, just three.
Oh, yeah, it is four. You're right. It is four. I'm the Catholic one. Wow. Look at you.
How about that? I know. We're all going to hell. But then the second penalty happens and Gordon does it again, gets in the way of Calvin Phillips.
Cheat. I hate it. I hate everything about it. But part of my bias against it is that I was a defender. Right. If I was a forward, I probably would be like, oh, well, that's just part of the game. But nah, I hate that.
But dem do rules do.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Those are the rules. And then just like that, that did it. They bring on Miguel Amarón. You're like, okay, he's back. Nope.
No, he's not.
No, he's not. No, he's not.
I don't know what's...
Anyhow, my bad. I meant to put Barnes on. Barnes goes, scores a brace, and they win.
No, Amarón got hurt. So who else got hurt? There was Newcastle, I think, of 8-9 players.
They have
could start
between injuries and suspensions. They are missing a full starting 11.
Yeah, but didn't they have two players they brought on and took off in this game? Or was it just Amarón?
Moy Smile might be one. Calvin Phillips' fat ass counted as the other three. Shorbilius thoughts.
Yeah, well, a lot of them. Sure, Billy. Besides Amarón, who else went down in this match?
I mean, they were dropping like flies at one point.
It might have been Lachelle's had gone down.
Oh, Lachelle's. So ACL, that's right. Yeah. And then you had Areola on the other side, the goalkeeper.
Yep.
So Isak's penalties were actually against
Lachelle's.
Yeah.
A different goalkeeper.
Yep, we saw it. We got it. Thank you.
You asked Shorbilly, and just, the second I got it, I was telling you.
And we had said it.
Wouldn't you like to know Graham was right?
Yeah, they're on a delay.
Okay.
Well, remember.
Mel's on a delay.
Because because we could...
See?
We dump button, but we don't use it.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. And, you know, Harry Barnes comes on. Two goals.
Fucking boom. Great. Both of them great as well. Like, they were both decent finishes.
His first goal was just like Antonio's first goal. Like a perfectly weighted pass right through that he just fucking slots.
So I'll be looking forward to him being substituted at halftime next week with a broken leg.
Yeah, precisely.
Because anybody that does well seems to get injured for Newcastle. It's like
they're playing us. Please get hurt as hell. But
You know what? I reckon they won't sign anybody this summer.
They got a whole damn team.
Well, no, they won't sign anyone this summer. They'll fire the entire physical therapy staff. Bring a whole new physio team in.
Don't disagree with that.
And then they'll just actually have a squad to work with.
Right. They'll actually have a team. So the funniest of stat lines is Anthony Gordon gets two penalties, and then gets two yellow cards and gets sent off.
But idiot. I mean, the first one, I think, was a drag back on Kudus.
Professional foul.
One of the commentators made the point, and I absolutely believe it's like, that's how good Mohamed Kudus is. Gordon was like, even I can't keep up with him. And he was the fastest player on the pitch for Newcastle since Almiron went down. Yeah. And he just gave him the little tug back, had to do it.
Yeah, professional foul, take the yellow.
It is what it is, took the yellow.
Then don't get
but
the
then
ball
the
away
stupid,
later.
But and very blatantly split the two players with the. With the bully kick.
Yeah.
It's not like I've done the gentlemanly thing as a dickhead and kicked it a little harder than I should at the person.
Right.
So it maybe bounces off them, but you can't accuse me of not giving you the ball.
Right. I gave him the ball.
Yeah. But he puts it between both West Ham players and splits them, and the ball traveled a good 8-9 yards past them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so stupid. And when you just saw all of these players go down with injury, your team fucking needs you.
Yeah. Very much so.
I mean, this kicking the ball away. Also, the referee looked like he forgot he booked him already. That's why you write it down, Dickie.
Yeah,
because precisely. It took Jared Bowen reminding him that he'd already booked Anthony Gordon earlier in the game. But this is akin to you have four yellow cards and you play 2 days before Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
Anthony Gordon was just on international duty with England. He comes back. It's a very frantic game. He's one of the only players that made it almost 90 minutes. So I need a break on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get myself sent off for something stupid.
Don't fancy playing me, old club. Yeah. I'm gonna go ahead and take this one off, Gaffer. Sorry.
Exactly. Fucking stupid, man. I love every. It is his dumb face walking off too. He's like, what do you mean? I just kicked the ball away. Yeah, second yellow.
Yeah,
you forgot you had a yellow card too.
Yeah, dodo.
Idiot.
Moving on with Sheffield and Fulham. A dreadfully boring first half.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Real quick, Thomas Suchek should have equalized.
Oh yeah, yeah. Hit it off his chest and
instead of his head. If he went at it with his head, I think that's a goal.
It's 4-4.
Oh, I don't know why. He must have thought he was closer in or something, but went at it with his chest instead. I mean, West Ham had two chances at the end of the game.
Oh, absolutely.
So it was a fucking barn burner, that one. It was wild.
Boring ass first half with Fulham and Sheffield.
So six goals happened. Right? Four of those six goals were in 12 second half minutes. So it's just like the worst football I've ever seen played again. Mm-hmm. This is the second or third time this season I wanted to scratch my eyes out watching the fucking highlights. And that I'm surprised that the first half highlights lasted the full 4 minute slot that they had in the highlight package, because there was nothing to see.
No.
It was pitiful. Nothing.
And in fact, if anything, it was Fulham really had the upper hand and missed a couple of good opportunities, and that was it.
There was not. I think Muniz hit the post with a looping header. I think that was it.
There was one shot that the keeper got his hands on low and knocked it off the post.
Yeah,
yeah, and that was it.
And that was it. Right. Yeah. So my whole notes for the first half was dog shit.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And then you get Bertrand Diaz, the January signing. That they brought in, gets that first goal, and then within a moment, fucking Fulham answers and makes it 1-1.
Yeah, so it was Ollie McBurnie feeding Diaz, and Fulham just got caught too far up the pitch, really. Yep. I mean, it was a pretty bad giveaway. I think, was it Lukic or whoever, kind of gave the ball away in a bad position, and then half of the defense had already started running forward, and Ollie McBurnie was played into that space and then crossed over for Berenson Diaz. But yeah, and then a corner. I mean, it's almost like he had some sort of weird, like, invisibility cloak or something, because he's one of the longest, tallest men on the pitch.
Yeah.
And Sheffield just didn't mark him.
No,
there wasn't
at all.
Anyone within 5 yards of him. Nope. He was able to literally stand. He didn't even jump for the header.
Yeah.
He just stood still and redirected it and guided it across. And hell of a header. Put it into the far side. Into the side netting. It was great, but why wasn't he challenged in any way, shape, or form? And nobody even made a half-hearted effort.
And then Diaz returns the favor to McBurnie, and McBurnie gets a goal.
Exactly, just a few minutes after that, right? Yep. And McBurnie gets his goal. It was pretty wild. Oh. And it was so at 2-1 there.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking, like, this is all right. Fulham's got to have something. I mean, you know, the Sheffield United aren't good. We all have seen that.
Nope. Sheffield gets a third. Sheffield gets a fourth, and the fourth gets called back.
Correct. And the worst part about that is VAR took that away for an offside for a player that they said was involved. I don't know that he necessarily was involved. Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
I think that's a little controversial. But then Sheffield let themselves, once again, they let their concentration slip, and they let their shoulders dip, right? Because Bobby De Cordova Reed, just a minute and a half later, essentially his first touch, scores from 20 yards out, makes it 3-2.
Yeah.
Now Sheffield, instead of being 4-1 up,
it's no Tyler Adams against Mexico, but pretty fucking good.
Yeah. But instead of being 3-2 or 4-1 up, they're 3-2. They're still up, but it's 3-2, and that momentum. I mean, you could physically see a metronome a pendulum on the field swing to Fulham.
Completely.
Yeah.
It was almost like Fulham went, oh shit, we were almost down 4-1. Are these guys, hold on, let's start playing footy.
Yeah.
Okay, now we'll start playing.
Exactly. And play did they.
Mm-hmm.
That ball that came in to Muniz was not the easiest to deal with.
Mm-mm.
And from Traore, it was behind him by about 2 yards, but he adjusted his body well. And what a fucking strike. Wow. What a connection with an overhead kick. You don't see it often. A lot of times they'll loop in. Rarely have we seen, you know, very, very good overhead kick goals. A lot of times they'll dribble over the line or whatever. That he kept his eye on the ball the entire time and hit it clean as fuck.
And what is this now? 7 for 7 for him in matches with goals, or like 6 for 7 or something like that?
Something stupid. It's something ridiculous.
All he's doing is scoring goals.
Oh, yeah. He's in the form of his life.
And you start to wonder, you know, if you're Fulham, you know, okay, well, then, you know, Raul Jimenez becomes our backup.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't need to go find anybody. We got our guy. We got our point man. We're good.
Well, I mean, for now, until they sell him to Saudi for $60 million in the summer.
It's true.
Or Manchester United comes sniffing around for no reason.
No, you did that last week. You said Saudi's no longer spending money anymore. So
I just find it funny.
What do we think this leads Fulham to? You know, kind of they've finishing the season strong.
Politely 10th.
Yeah, it's in
very politely and unassuming 10th.
But what do we think this means for this team next season? Because there are some very aging players on the team, and there's definitely some pieces that are like, Polina's gone. He's going to get sold.
More than likely.
Like, so.
So, I mean, I think it's going to depend if they can keep hold of Marco Silva, really.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people saying that Silva and De Zerbi are the two kind of auditioning for the Liverpool job, essentially. Xabi Alonso this week has ruled himself out of that job, says that he's staying another year at Leverkusen, and that's where he wants to be. That's the right place for him, quote unquote.
Okay.
Carlo's supposed to be going to Brazil at some point,
right?
We think,
right?
Which we all are still here for. Please,
we all fucking want
do
that.
It. Yeah. So I don't know who Liverpool's going to get.
Right.
I don't know what they're not going to go for Thomas Tuchel. I mean, the way that shit's going at Bayern, I think his stock has fallen tremendously. Yeah. First time in what, 14 years or something, they haven't won the title.
Yeah,
they won't win the title. And his comments after their recent loss this past weekend, they lost to Dortmund. First time they lost to Dortmund in like 23 years at home, in the league. I think Dortmund may have won in the cup once. But so they had that, and then Thomas Tuchel comes out afterwards and said, "There's no reason to count points anymore. Congratulations, Leverkusen."
You don't say
that.
Well, what you're supposed to say is, well, I mean, you see, we signed Harry Kane. What else do you expect?
Right. No, exactly. So, but for Fulham, what you said, where does Fulham go? It's going to depend on who they can keep. As you say, they got to replace Paulinho. They're going to possibly have to replace their manager.
Do we think there's anything coming out of the Blades for this game?
No.
Now we turn our attention to the top of the table, as it seemed the weekend leaves us with more questions than goals that were actually scored. Liverpool 2, Brighton 1, Manchester City 0, Arsenal 0. Welbeck with a scorcher to open the match.
What a hit. What a hit. I haven't seen him score a goal like that since that one he had against Leicester in Leicester's title-winning season.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fucking good goal.
Shit,
that
he hits just the crap out of that.
The reaction, the composure, and then the ferocity and placement he still had.
Yeah.
I mean, it was brilliant strike.
And then after that, Liverpool. This scoreline is not indicative, honestly, of how well Liverpool played. They looked good. They just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net.
I didn't write it down, which is why I'm looking it up now. Mm-hmm. But Liverpool had to have like 72 shots.
They just couldn't
30.
They just weren't putting it on target or in the net. But I haven't seen Liverpool play that kind of full throttle in a very long time.
Well, like, they've been in a lot of it is Salah having been injured.
Right, but also
but he's like, the one that makes them he's their outlet.
But you go down 1-0, I've seen them kind of, you know, squeak it out. Like that was just fuck this.
Yeah.
And they were on.
Brighton did have a couple of chances. Kelleher was forced into a few saves in the second half, but for the rest, the remaining bit of that first half, you're absolutely right. It was all Liverpool. And most of the second half was all Liverpool.
Yeah.
Brighton did carve out a few opportunities for themselves in a brief spell that they were on top in the second half.
It should have probably honestly been a 4 or 5 to 1 match.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
I mean, Salah, I think at halftime, Salah had 7 shots.
Yeah.
Like 3 blocked, 1 on target, and, you know, two or three that were off target.
Well,
it was just like any old thing he could get his toe to, he was trying to shoot. It was weird. This is where, like, I feel like sometimes they should exercise a touch of patience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a ball over the top that he tried to volley with. It was coming over his shoulder, and he tried to volley with the outside of his left foot. Just take it down and have it strike with your right.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just take a touch. He had 3 steps on his defender. It's like you just made the complete wrong decision. And maybe that's just a little rust since he's only recently come back from injury.
Could be the case.
You know, it's just his mindset just seemed to be a little off.
But of course, the game winning goal was going to come from Mo, right? Everybody knew. Everybody in the stadium knew. Everybody watching the game knew. It was like, Mo's going to get the winner.
if you throw 700 darts at the triple 20, eventually you're going to hit a ton 80.
Right, precisely.
You know what I mean? And he did. I want to talk about Diaz's goal. Was brilliant. What a fucking reaction that was, the way he stole in there. There was nobody shocked more than Verbruggen.
Oh, yeah.
That was insane.
Mel, you had something for us?
To quote Taylor, so what you're saying is they need Mo patience.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's exactly what they need.
This now puts Liverpool in first place going into the second match,
they
which was yours.
In control of their own destiny.
Absolutely the case.
Shit.
Which turns us directly on to your match. Gotta say, the atmosphere was fucking tense.
You could cut it with a knife.
Mm-hmm.
It was tense.
The crowd on the pitch, the managers, it was
tense.
You could feel it. You could feel how the tension in that game.
Big time. It got a little chippy as well. And the referee,
quite chippy.
As you said off air, the referee kept the cards in the pocket,
which I
think added to the tension.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. You sometimes think, hey, look, you know, throw a card each way, especially there in the first half where there was a couple of fouls back and forth and the ref like pointed to De Bruyne to across the field where one of their guys should have gotten a yellow card but didn't. And it's almost like maybe the next 2 fouls on each team just gets a yellow to kind of
calm it down,
settle it the fuck down.
Yeah.
But I also appreciate that he stuck to his guns. He pretty much kept the cards in the pocket for the most part.
So City did their normal thing surrounding the goalkeeper surrounding the referee like crazy. I mean, they were complaining from the fucking off.
Oh, yeah.
Arsenal didn't do a lot of that till much later, and mostly was just Odegaard, as the captain, is allowed to talk to the referee.
Right.
But I did find it funny. I was very nervous for Gabriel, actually, because that's the sort of atmosphere that we've seen in the past. Gabriel would tend to get a red.
Ironically, it ended up being Saliba that was all in fucking Holland's head the whole time, and it was the two of them yapping at each other.
Both of them, because they both kind of took turns on Holland.
Mm-hmm.
Gabriel left the game with only 3 fouls. Saliba, none.
Yeah.
No fouls called on him at all.
Yeah.
He was just kind of, it's almost like a good cop, bad cop that they have going. And there was one instance where Holland was standing there and Gabriel was just walking by and he got real close to his ear and you could tell he was just saying, go fuck yourself, you Viking twat. Just kind of, you could tell he was talking shit. It was brilliant. It was so good. And then at the end of the game, Gabriel and Holland were actually, you know, kind of like we used to do. What was that team we used to play? It had Gio on it where it was always
Fuentes' team.
Where it was always physical as shit, but it was fairly physical. Like nobody was trying to cheat. It was just a hard-nosed match, right?
Yeah.
And Holland and Gabriel were embracing after the game, like, hey, you know what? Fair play. Good stuff. Blah, blah, blah. Fucking Pep Guardiola comes over and gets involved. And you could tell at the end of it, Gabriel and Holland hugged. And they just held for a second. And it was almost like Gabriel was like, is he always like that? And I was like, yeah, sorry about that. He's kind of weird sometimes.
Chad's weird.
Very funny.
The match, ultimately, no goals. And what, for the first time in 57 matches at the Etihad?
City was held to no goals for the first time in a long time. over a season and a half.
Yeah.
At home, yeah.
So, here, because there's, you know...
Oh, no, you only play 19 at home, don't you?
Yeah. 18 at home.
Yeah, so that's... No, 19. 38 games
season.
So, 19... 57, that'd be 3 years was the last time that they were...
Yeah, gave up a goal.
Gave up a goal. We're held to no goals, rather. Right.
But for this match, ultimately, just really a chess match. There wasn't a ton of... You know, there was action to it, but it wasn't, like you were saying off mic, more of kind of a tactician kind of match.
Yeah, so there was ebbs and flows, obviously, to the game, but... City had most of the possession, but some of the football that Arsenal produced to get out of trouble in their own box was just brilliant to watch. It was insane. Mm. And the manner in which, I mean, it was the perfect 1-2 punch with Saliba and Gabriel, which is why neither of them ever received a card, because they just, one would go in, it would just kind of target Haaland at different points at different times.
Right.
And then I don't know if it was Kivior or if it was Jorginho or who it was, but they were man-marking De Bruyne kind of out of the game. He had one or two passes that kind of unlocked us a bit, but we recovered well. Ben White was excellent, and Declan Rice was fucking everywhere as usual.
It's for me, what I saw was you didn't make the mistakes you made last year at the Etihad.
Yep.
And
learned from it. We didn't try to go toe-to-toe with them.
And because of that, you didn't lose the game.
Correct.
Where last year you lost the game and ultimately lost the title, because you tried to go toe to toe.
Now the annoying bit though is Gabriel Jesus started for the first time. It's Easter Sunday. The script is written for Peter Drury. Mm-hmm. Just let him score.
Just so you go, Jesus.
Jesus is resurrected on Jesus. Sunday. It's brilliant. Come on, brilliant. It's
especially the way Drury says.
I know
Jesus is the. It's fabulous.
It did it. It had it's all written there for it and. City had to go play party pooper.
Final question. Now what the fuck?
So, Liverpool still have to play Tottenham. We still have to play Tottenham. I think City and Tottenham are done now.
No, City still has to. They mentioned that in the broadcast that all so three there, have to
there,
play.
There are games where people can drop points the rest of the season. We still have to play Brighton away.
Mm-hmm.
We have to play United. There's a lot of points in which people could drop. I think City have Villa on Thursday.
They do.
I mean, that's another one. Liverpool still have to play Villa, and I think we may still have to play Villa,
actually. You still have to play Villa, too,
so yes. There are a lot of games where...
So you have fourth and fifth place who are vying back and forth for a Champions League spot.
That they will affect this title race in some way, shape, or form. Yeah.
They are going to play you fucking tough. Oh,
right.
And not for nothing for Liverpool... At least you and City get Villa in your building.
Right. Liverpool has to go to Villa Park. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, and Tottenham has Newcastle still.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so there's potential for all of these clubs and bitter rivals of each of these clubs to have a hand in the title race. So it's going to be very interesting. It's on a knife's edge, man. It's you drop one game now, and the title could... the shift in another direction
it's
again.
It's absolutely the case.
And this is what, you know, when we were 5 points clear, or City were 5 points clear, and you thought, like, shit, they got to fuck up twice, you're like, that's not going to happen.
Right.
Now, this one game separates the top three spots, and then one game separates fourth and fifth, and everybody still has to play those fourth and fifth place teams. It's going to be a really fucking fun end of the season. This might be the best title race we've ever seen.
Running out the rest of the league, and oh, so that happened. Bournemouth 2, Everton 1, Palace 1, Forest 1, Spurs 2, Luton 1, Chelsea 2, Burnley 2, Villa 2, Wolves 0, Brentford 1, Manchester United 1. Everton just do it to them fucking selves, man.
So I'm going to
do it to themselves.
I'm going to let you rant.
Uh huh.
The only thing I wrote was two goalkeeping errors and then Seamus Coleman, what the fuck happened?
Yeah. My only thing is looking at the penalties that were called this weekend, and particularly let's look at the two Anthony Gordon penalties. You don't even go to VAR for Tyler Adams clipping
Calvert-Lewin.
It doesn't even go to VAR. What the actual fuck? Like, you look at penalties that get called. That is exactly the penalty that happened to Garnacho right before the break that Tarkowski did.
Right.
It was a soft clip, and Calvert-Lewin went down very easily. But it is clear as day, the foot hits the ankle. I mean, it's not debatable at all. And I'm fine if a ref looks at it at VAR and goes, or the fact that VAR even reviewed it, because that's the thing. The broadcast booth knows when VAR
they can hear. They can hear the chatter.
And the color commentary guy went, why was that not even checked? He said that aloud. It's just like, at that point, it's nil-nil. That could absolutely change how that game goes.
I don't think it changes the outcome, especially when you get in your own way like you did.
Right. Ultimately,
I think that really VAR went, you know what? That's just more admin for us.
Yeah, thanks. But your thoughts? Do you think it should have at least been fucking looked at?
I mean, of course it should have. Any of those things should be looked at, definitely.
Like, the whole fucking point of VAR is to look and see if you miss, and it's just like you didn't even look at it.
Yeah, it's
like,
fucked up.
I say it, and I'm going to keep standing by it. Everton does, their destiny's in their own hands, right? They play only lower half teams for the most part of the rest of the season, other than to play you and Liverpool, right?
Us is the last day, which you should be safe by then. Your fate should be known by then, rather.
Right.
Well, it also depends on the fucking tribunal, too.
Yeah, which that finished last week, and apparently the middle of this week, we should hear.
Well, I don't know. Forest lodged their appeal, though.
Right.
And they don't have a date for when they're going to hear those.
Right. But we're going to hear what our penalty is going to be, at least. First.
Right.
So, because that's...
they actually do it.
Right.
They said you were going to hear it, and then they waited a week to tell you.
Right. Let's wait and see. But the hearing is done. We did the hearing early last week, so that's where we stand now. And they answered pretty quickly to Forrest after Forrest's hearing.
Yeah.
It was a week later they had released what the punishment was.
Right.
You know? So they were quick about that. For the Cherries, now on 38 points, no doubt about it, they're fucking safe. And it was, you know, for them, two good home wins against teams below you in the table.
Yep.
You came back and you beat Luton and you beat Everton. And you did exactly what you needed to do.
Are you worried about the mistakes, though? I feel like Pickford, given some of the saves that he's made and pulled out of his ass, I think he should have done better with that header.
Yes, I agree.
But what was Seamus Coleman doing? Was he just nobody talking to him? That the man that he thought was behind him was not really behind him?
I just don't think he saw the ball coming until it was right past the Tarkowski, who was in front of him. I just don't think he saw it.
But also, where's Pickford? Why is he on
Pickford's
that?
Way up on the near post.
Yeah, like, what are you doing?
One's talking to him, telling him, let it go, let it go, let it go. Like, because easily, all he had to do was just
turn his body to the left.
Just step out of the way.
If Pickford's there, he traps it down as he did, and Pickford just collects it. But it hit off his kind of bottom rib and shot, and because Pickford was out of position, rolled in the back of the net.
Yeah, it was terrible.
It looked really weird, and from somebody of Seamus Coleman's vast experience, it's just quite strange.
I don't expect much from Everton this Tuesday, regrettably, against Newcastle, even with Newcastle having no one.
You'll be playing the U18s, and by halftime, it'll be
at
fine.
At Newcastle. Now, but what it really, really ultimately comes down to is this weekend. This next weekend is Burnley at home. Have to win that game.
Yeah.
Have to win that game. You just have to. Oh, good news for them is fucking everybody else around them keeps on fucking losing and not getting fucking 3 points as well, which is helpful. They're very lucky that they're not a particularly good team. They're a fine team. And I think, you know, obviously without the points, they'd be sitting in 14th place, but we would be saying, like, Everton ain't any good. They're meh. And how are they going to be able to get better next season? They're probably not going to be allowed to spend any money again, depending on what happens with the new ownership and everything. You know, like, who fucking knows?
Yeah.
It's Everton that. So I'm doing barrel aged today. So there we go. Because nice. I want a aged Malort. Thank you.
You've had to do so many this season. You might as well mix it up, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah, that's what I did. I mixed it up, for fuck's sake. Whew. Palace got out early, and it really seemed like they had the opportunities, but Forrest just find a way. You know what? Chris Woods, big fucking meaty forehead. Fucking yeah. Doing it again.
But this was a delicate looper.
Yeah.
Like it little, was a looper.
A little touch to it.
But I didn't expect it. And mm-hmm. he even had the wherewithal to have a little look to see where Henderson was. I mean, like wow. Look at that. And it completely. Henderson obviously thinks he has a big dumb face, too, because he was like, there's no way he's shooting this.
Also worth noting, yet another big injury. Now, fortunately, they have Henderson as a backup. Johnston injured, out for the rest of the year.
Yep.
Like, Palace cannot catch a break no, with them these injuries,
either.
Man.
Them either, yeah.
Like,
but Mateta's strike was fucking brilliant as mm-hmm. well. It was a great ball to Eze from Lerma. I mean, mm-hmm. what a, and that was through traffic, daisy cutter through traffic. Brilliant fucking ball. And then a good layoff to Mateta, who absolutely fucking smashed it in.
Yeah.
Again, it was very similar to the Danny Welbeck one, except this one was planned. Danny Welbeck's just kind of fell to him and he took it, you know? It was great goals, both of them, really. But other than that, fuck all happened.
Well, and here's the interesting part for that, too, is Forrest is at home. This is their first response since the point deduction. And granted, Palace has changed managers, and they're looking a little more revital. But this is a game you got to fucking win, right?
Yeah.
And you came out looking like crap. You started so flat in your own building, and your back's against the wall.
There were a few times Hudson-Odoi like got himself in good positions and then way overcooked his cross. And I just something's just not clicking with Nuno yet. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but something's just not clicking at Forest.
For me, that performance doesn't deserve to get you out of the relegation zone, and yet it got you out of the relegation
zone.
Yeah.
I understand what you're trying to say.
Simply because the effort of Luton was far greater at Spurs. They just were playing a really fucking good team. Spurs,
I wouldn't go that far. In relationship to them, yes.
In relationship to Palace, they are a team battling for the for Champions League, and Palace is a team that is already going to be in Dubai. Mentally,
right,
next week.
Yeah,
you know, right. Like that's where they're gonna be. So, and Luton get the early goal, and Luton did what we expect Luton to do. They played him as tough as fucking nails, and ultimately just cream roast to the top. There was an unfortunate own goal.
That fucking own goal, it's so bad because that player played so well. Kabore,
mm-hmm.
I was just trying to read my notes. Kabore was played so well all game, and it kind of had Timo Werner shut down. He was put in the unfortunate position. I think the ball came at him kind of quickly, skidded off the turf. But he had to do something because Werner was there.
Right.
He was gonna.
Someone's gonna.
Unlike
Seamus Coleman, when there was nobody there and somebody should have told him, he had to intervene.
Now, I'm gonna say this. Even Timo Werner wouldn't have missed that chance.
That's a bold statement.
I don't think.
There you go. That's more like a dot, dot, dot. I don't think.
But maybe Kabore just felt bad. I was like, Timo, this is how you're supposed to do it.
Right.
This is how you tuck these away.
When you're inside the box, this is how you tuck it away. It's not that hard. But I just
felt so bad for him.
But even with that, and obviously finally Son gets the game winner, they... Spurs had chance after chance after chance after chance.
Kaminsky made a couple good saves. And you had the Son chance in the first half.
Yeah.
Hit both posts and then comes back out to, was it Diaby or somebody?
Uh-huh.
Moussa Diaby that struck really well. Actually had a bit of venom on the shot. And one of the Luton defenders cleared it off the line there.
Yep.
They were scraping by the skin of their teeth, Luton. They scored a great goal. I mean, Andrews Townsend, you know, kind of going coast to coast mm-hmm. after holding Son off, showed great strength and balance,
mm-hmm.
Composure to pick the ball up. And then at his age, I thought great speed to get down the field in the manner in which he did.
Yep.
Picked out a good ball to Barkley. Barkley seems like the treatment program's working and he's off the crayons because he's been playing really well for the last couple of months. And then has the composure and wherewithal to pick Chong out. who rifled beautifully into that far corner.
Yep.
And then, again, they had... This was a lot like Brighton and Liverpool, where Luton had a chance or two here or there later in the game, but for the most part, it was all Spurs. You're absolutely right. They started to turn the screw. And eventually, and we always say it, it's a stupid old cliche, but that under enough pressure, a dam will eventually break.
Oh, and it doesn't get any easier for Luton. Next up is home is at Arsenal. I'll say you're at home.
Oh, you're going to see this in my bet. Daddy, feature heavily.
But for Luton, the schedule doesn't get any easier. And everybody else, there's at least some winnable games in there. And for them, like they look at the schedule and it's like, okay, Everton, that might be the only game we could win. And if Everton wins a couple of games, it won't fucking matter. Or they play Forest again too. Maybe they could beat Forest. Like, right. But Forest is at Forest. Like, if those teams win a couple of games, Luton's done. And Luton doesn't. There's not opportunities on the schedule for Luton to win games, mm-hmm. and I think the clock's running out on them. Personally.
Could be. Let's just hope that you know. I know Melissa wouldn't like to lose Sexy Mark, but maybe the tribunal will turn something back good.
Yeah, we'll
frivolous
have to
appeal. Doc Forrest 5 more points.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Clarets go down a man and a coach, but somehow find a way to scrape it back and tie it twice.
I think it's more of Chelsea being shit.
I don't disagree.
Personally.
I'm not so sure that penalty was a penalty.
No, like, I don't think so either.
I think, he grabbed him, but then like Mudrick took like 3 more steps and went, oh, I can't get to the ball. Let me fall.
Well, he is a little more of a hip check.
Yeah.
Than I thought it was in full speed.
Yeah.
Everything looks worse when you slow it down no matter what.
Yeah.
But I could see why it was given. I could see why it's a yellow.
Right.
I mean, it just is what it is. It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
They were working hard, but I mean that was the catalyst. I guess there was just too many people on the field for Burnley to really express themselves.
Well, and honestly, good on Company for taking that red. You take that, like,
I loved
laid into the official. And you know what? You take that fucking red, man. Your team, your boys.
It showed some balls.
Especially a team that young, they need to see managers got our back. Managers got our, and that's why I think even when they go down, Vincent Kompany's keeping his job at Burnley.
Yeah, I don't disagree. But I did notice what it looked like to me, him mouthing at the center referee. After he had received the red, he said, show some fucking respect is what it looked like he was mouthing, what I could read. Burnley, after 30 games, I've won 4, drawn 6, lost 20, with a minus 34 goal differential. I'd say to Vincent Kompany, why don't you show some respect to your fucking fan base and try a little harder before you accuse other people of not showing respect
to you. Well, you know, you talk about a header. That first goal for Burnley. Woo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was beauty.
Oh, yeah. O'Shea's mm-hmm. Well, no, the first goal was the volley.
Right,
it was
second Josh goal Cullen. Was, yeah, O'Shea's goal.
O'Shea's goal was the header.
The tire. Yeah.
Hell of a header. Petrovic should have had that.
Yeah.
He clapped at it. I mean, it slipped right between his hands. Yep. He had everything on it. There was no reason for him to try to catch it. Should have parried it wide or should have punched. But he had it easily covered. And it was a little bit of pace on the ball, but a top-level goalkeeper, you would expect to make that save, and he just didn't. Chelsea should have had 7 goals.
Yeah.
But they kept fluffing their lines, whether it was Nico Jackson, whether it was Sterling had a chance to win it late on with a header as well he put wide. Cole Palmer's kind of doing it all himself.
Seems to be the only one that knows how to put the ball in the back of the net.
Enzo had 2 opportunities that he let slip. I don't even think he got shots away. Either time, but it had opened up for him, but he just didn't have the wherewithal or the capacity to try. And I don't know what's next for this Chelsea team. I really don't. And
Poch called him out at the end of the match. He said they didn't play with any heart. They didn't
wanted it more than us, I think he said. They've got a lot of work to do on their hands. I don't think those lemons are working. Maybe he should try a different citrus.
And for Burnley, I know we've been kind of not really talking about them just because there hasn't been much to say. You got to give them credit. You know what? They haven't lost in their last 3, and they're the only team in the bottom 6 that's actually gotten a win recently.
Fair. Yeah.
So they're at least doing something.
They're trying. Yeah.
They're, you know, If Luton spends too much time worrying about who's in front of them, they're going to get passed by who's behind them. They need to be very careful in that regards. Because again, Burnley at least have opportunities. Like, you know, I want to say Everton should beat Burnley at home, but Everton hasn't been great at home, and that's the opportunity for Burnley right there.
Right.
Yeah. You want to be right back in the thick of it, beat Everton at Goodison. And you are right back in the fucking thick of it for real. Yeah. keeping it going. Villa, just, you know what? A straightforward professional win from Villa. And it can't go without saying Cunha ends up getting hurt, I think, on international duty and not able to come back to play.
Yep.
Wolves have no one right now. They literally have no
one.
That's
most of the league because there's too much fucking football.
Right.
That's just what it boils down to.
But then you look at teams like, at least in the case of Newcastle, there's at least enough depth. Not a ton of depth, but at least enough depth. It's just fucking... They got eaten.
Yeah, but now Newcastle might actually have to play the horse.
Right.
That got punt. Like,
it's true.
He may have to start. In. Yeah.
Yeah. maybe they bring on Willy Copter.
That'd be perfect.
You know what difference between Willy Copter and Timo Werner is? Willy Copter would have put it in the back of the net. That's for damn sure.
Would have had a third chance at it. It's a third leg joke, Mel.
Third leg joke, you say.
But like I said, for me, Villa, it was a clean cut professional win. They did exactly what they needed to do, knowing that earlier in the day Spurs had won and moved into fourth place. And for Wolves, just try to see out the fucking season healthy.
Well, I was actually kind of surprised to see the stats from this game. Wolves had a slight advantage in just about every category except shots on target. Because I thought on the eye test, Villa were the much better side in the game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I was kind of surprised to see that they actually had more possession, more shots overall, not shots on target. But Villa only had two more than they did, or three more than they did.
The turning point of the game.
But I thought they were super dangerous.
Honestly, the turning point in the game was in the first half. Ant Nori had a very clean look at the net, and Emmy made a brilliant save, got big and wide and put it over the net. That could have very well changed the overall game if Wolves go
and
up
people
on Villa
forget
first.
Too, this is a bit of a derby as well. Yeah, this is absolutely a black country derby. They're only 17 miles apart, these two teams.
Yeah
the Lannisters and the Starks.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Wolves
True.
And the Lions.
Diaby tried to rip a hole in the net. What does he have against the net?
he
fucking rifled that thing in.
He lined it up perfectly, and he knew he had it. And on the camera angle looking at him, you can just see like a little grin just before he rocks it off.
Before he got his rocks off his head?
Actually, you know what? Credit to Konza, too. That was a nifty little...
Stop. He ain't mean that shit. He'll tell you he meant it. He ain't mean that shit.
You know what?
That was a cross to Duran, and he...
You know what it counted as?
A goal.
You know what it counted as? A goal.
Oh, no, it went in. Yeah. But he didn't mean it. That was a cross to Duran. That is very similar to the only goal I scored in college. Actually.
You were going for a cross?
It was a windy day, as Klopp would say.
And let's finish it up. Bees and United, honestly, the Bees were the better side.
Big time. Big, and massively the better side.
You can tell the difference that they are the minute you have Wissa, Mbeumo, and Tony.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's night
now,
and Mbeumo day. Mbeumo
came off the bench.
How
but
they attack. Night and day how 100%. They attack.
The post was United's best player.
Yep.
By far.
Oh, yeah.
Onana played quite well. The rest of the United team was relative dog shit. Yeah. I think Fernandes had one shot on goal that was saved pretty easily. And then it looked like a smash and grab. I mean, Mason Mount scored in, what, the 93rd minute or whatever it was?
I was going to say, and yet it would appear United was going to get away with another victory they didn't fucking deserve.
So, I mean, I wrote this down on purpose because of how ridiculous it was. I didn't write the full quote down, but one of the announcers essentially said, this is the goal that could jumpstart Mason Mount's United career and propel United into a fight for the top four. And then 90 seconds later, Ivan Tony's allowed to dance around the box.
Yep.
Cut back, and they march right down the field. And that made me laugh immensely.
Yeah,
that was pretty much. That was fucking brilliant.
I can fit. Allow me.
This
to say
is
this.
The goal that could propel Mason, jumpstart Mason Mount's United career. It's been hampered by injury. I do feel bad for him. But 90 seconds.
You know what? You know what they say about United, right?
What's that?
Bunch of fucking frauds.
Sure money.
All right, I'm not writing my cup of losers tonight. I forgot to pull out the paper for it. So
I have writer's cramp. I've lost so many fucking times this season. No great for me. I am now down 16-47. Let's hear what you have to say, Sam, while I search for Pat's email.
Well, Luton couldn't put off the draw or the victory, so I am now down $218.
Big Sam's Lock of the Week.
Did you know that 25.80452% of the time? It works 100% of the time.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
I was waiting for a 0505872387 14.
For the midweek, give me a North London parlay. Arsenal over Luton and Spurs over the Irons at +138. Just get myself back towards the block again.
Just doing safe shit.
Yeah, exactly. I want to get
so
towards
you can stay
block.
In front.
I want to fucking well did what you did when you were in front.
True.
So how it works.
True.
And now, it's time for our degenerate gambling friend, Pat's Pick of the Week.
I miss talking to Pat on the phone.
Oh, he was coming back from Orlando, so yeah, been a long week.
The title of the email is Short Email, Bed, Sleep, Work. well, I lost last weekend, even though I was right about a draw, wrong that there would be goals in the match. I'm down 1,300 for the midweek games, three-way parlay. Oh, there's no punctuation there. I'm down 1,300.
He's very tired.
So for the midweek games, a three-way parlay. Fulham over Forest. And I'm not sure he saw this past weekend. Uh-huh. Wolves over Burnley. Spurs over West Ham. $100 pays off at 1,330. Have a good week, and I'll talk to you on Thursday. Oh. So you could be $30 to the good if this hits.
He picks Spurs over West Ham.
Yeah.
Spurs
sure.
always Tottenham.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and for me, I've...
Nine-way parlay!
Not quite, but I did go a bit all over the place with this one. So I'll tell you, I've got Isak and Harvey Barnes, since they're the only two fit forward players for Newcastle, to both have a shot on target against Everton.
Okay.
Just a shot on target.
Shot on target.
Arsenal to have over 2.5 goals against Luton. Arsenal need to score 3 or more.
Got it.
Okay. Don't have to win. They could lose 7-3. But if they score 3, I'm good. City is going to beat Villa. Sorry, Mel. But usually after City drop points, the next person gets fucked real bad.
Uh-huh.
I can't wait until Villa fucks City and then the conversation changes again.
I will be super happy to lose this bet.
Oh, trust me. If Villa beats City, that man's going to come in and kiss you on the mouth.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
He's going to grab you by both your cheeks and give you a big old kiss.
You weren't in the room when I walked in today. Who says I haven't already done that?
Heard.
Chelsea, and then the last piece of this is Chelsea and Manchester United to play out a draw on Thursday. That pays me on a $100 bet at +1.
Not good gambling.
$1,223. 1, 2, 2, 3.
Nine-way parlay.
I think I will be good.
Hella zesty.
It's going to be fine.
Fine. Awesome.
Well, I'm liking it.
You know what
Everything
else is?
Everything is awesome.
You know what else is awesome?
What?
The fucking chicken.
Well, Kitty hit with Villa's win over Wolves, and she sits at 16-13. So this week, I gave Kitty Arsenal hosting Luton Town. Now, Kitty showed me a video of her in the studio with Jay-Z and Kendrick Lamar.
Hmm.
That explains the smell she came back with. apparently, Kitty is the original chicken head.
Yeah, no.
Jesus Christ.
Got him, coach. Rock, rock.
Chicken.
Rock, wow.
Rock, chicken head.
Wow. So apparently, Kitty is the original chicken head, and rappers love to sample her beats. Now, besides being huge in the hip-hop game, Jay and Kendrick both love them some Gunners, so she is picking Arsenal to win.
Very good. How about that?
This warning probably doesn't apply to half of you at this point, but I'm just going to go ahead and say it anyways. Please do gamble legally and responsibly.
Very good. That is going to wrap it up, boys and girls. Mr. Graham, any parting words?
Just to say it for the masses.
You expected me to say breasts, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Ha ha! Best cold raider in the business, bitch.
Had a girl.
Maybe if Pickford did that, y'all would have got a point.
Yeah, maybe.
We gotta do it Pickford style. Teddy arms. Yeah. Teddy arms.
Seamus Coleman hit it with his third leg, too.
Is that also a dick joke?
Yeah, he tucked his boner up in his shorts.
Nice.
His waistcoat. Anyway, no. Obviously, we talked a lot about it on Soundcheck, which you can find at patreon.com/DUFootballShow. You get all of our extra content. Soundcheck is our actual Soundcheck, where we talk about a lot of fun stuff, catch up from the week. In our lives, and sometimes you don't even hear it. It's weird because we're actually checking our sound. That's why it's fun. It's a $5 fucking gamble. You also get Injury Time, which is our preview show every week where we talk about the upcoming action and sometimes get a little more saucy, as it's commonly and lovingly referred to as DU After Dark. But I wanted to, for the masses, shout out the neighborhoods and the city of Baltimore. After this,
what happened?
This accident with the Key Bridge, obviously having come down as a result of a ship running into it. It's just, you know, listen to that for the full take. But a lot of good people, good hardworking, working class, blue collar guys and gals are going to be greatly affected by this, as well as the whole region's commute and obviously. The six or seven people that have lost their lives, it's all just quite sad. The whole thing just kind of sucks, and my heart goes out to my city that I lived in for 7 years and grew a great affinity for, and it's just sad. So brought Bo in tonight. Obviously, it's not made here anymore. Same, you got a Bo as well. Just raise the boat for Baltimore today, y'all.
Yep, absolutely. I would go ahead and talk about what we're doing next, but he already did all the fucking plugs. Amazing.
Good whore.
He can do it on this show. Sure as fuck can't do it on a fucking TikTok in one continuous thread.
Did a backup video.
Podcast! Yeah,
because he gets done and goes, oh shit, I forgot to actually plug the show. So I'm going to record it now.
I was four pints deep.
I'm going to go ahead and
standing in the alley.
We have the pictures of you double fisting looking up at the sky. You know,
I was looking at the TV.
We have that already.
By the way, we have one chat. We have a lot of questions in the chat, but one that I want to pose you before we wrap up. What is the worst drunk? Malort drunk or Buckfast drunk?
Never been Malort drunk because we only ever do one.
Yeah. I would say
I've been Buckfast drunk.
I would say Buckfast drunk because Buckfast is like, it's Mad Dog. It's Scottish Mad Dog with caffeine in it.
Yeah.
I mean, Buckfast drunk, Malort drunk, you probably won't get drunk because you'll throw up before it's time be drunk.
Excellent point.
Well, and you're also probably ripping shots of Malort while you're drinking beer, so
yeah. So you'll just end up falling asleep at some point. But Buckfast drunk, you're absolutely right. It's got the high level of caffeine in there. I mean, it's literally the original Four Loko, honestly, but with a lot more alcohol.
As soon as you were saying that, Charbelle went, so it's Four Loko.
Yeah, but it's more chemically than Four Loko, and it's 14 or 18%, where Four Loko was only 7.5 or something.
It is Welch's, alcoholic Welch's grapefruit juice with Red Bull in it.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It is insane.
That's where you end up in a field cuddling a sheep.
You're right.
Aren't really sure how you got there.
Yeah,
like, that's a Buckfast drunk.
Yeah, it's the old Dave Attell Jägermeister commercials. Like, there's just a scene of bushes. Suddenly a guy jumps out butt naked, covered in blood, and it just says above the screen.
Stripper heel hanging out of his mouth.
It just says above the screen, Jäger. Right? Like, that's the Bucky right there. That is definitely the Bucky. So stick around if you like to hear us do the EFL show. That's going to be up in just a few minutes. And, of course, Injury Time as well. I'm not plugging it to Graham because he already plugged it.
Come on.
So until next week, everybody.
Patreon.com/DUFootballShow.
Podcast.
Give a little shimmy.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton.
punch you in the eye and drink your rye. Sam Houston.
Sam Houston.
Arsenal fans have another Sam. Great day, yay, the fucking Gooner Graham. Stump of a lord. Looks great in shorts. Sam Graham.
Sam Graham.
Fucking United. United! Hit the fucking mute button!